White helped me with that also, because he spoke about something in his first scripture that I kind of did a uh-oh, because sometimes you end up talking about the same thing. You know, not even planning on it, but when he went back to Numbers chapter 11, he utilized something that we don't think of now and then. When we use the Word of God, we're talking about God's law. And if you remember some of my sermons in the past, God's law is contained in things such as, this has been a tremendous learning experience, I know, for the people of God for years, because we've heard of things called commandments. Most professing Christians in this world know about the Ten Commandments. There's a judge in Alabama that will really stand up for them, not knowing really, again, the spiritual depth and meaning. But even with someone like that, you kind of give some respect to, at least for what they know, that they're valid, you know, announcements from God on the way that we ought to live our lives. So there is something, though, that's called commandments. How many other people know about other laws, though? Some laws called statutes, which you would find, because when somebody would ask, well, what about these laws of clean and unclean meats that really aren't revealed in a way, particularly in the Ten Commandments, but they're revealed in something called statutes. So we know that those are statutes. The holy days are called statutes, but they're all contained within the laws of God. Now, without you thinking about it or not, Mr. White brought something up that was contained within the law of God, and that's something called the testimonies, that we can look back at something and have a topic on something that's very valid that the Bible speaks about in a variety of different ways, and he went to the New Testament and he quoted scripture from that. And those are called testimonies. We can actually go to the testimonies to find out what God's law says about a certain subject. It's interesting to be able to go there. So some of these things, as we talk about things and we relate to these things, we see something that's called hindsight, which I started talking about last time I was here. There's something called insight that I actually wished I would have used yesterday on the way to my in-laws, because I know that I-75 has one lane open. And I was thinking about that as I was traveling there. I saw a sign on the way that said, I-75, one lane. You may want to consider the alternate route, of which I've done. It's Highway 25. At least there's no stopping and there's no lights, and you can get through pretty well on that. But I said, you know, why get off I-75? Well, about 2 miles later, I found out why. And if I would have just used insight, which would have made me recall, Eric, do you remember when you went up here a couple of other times when you had a rock slide? When you get two lanes of traffic that go down to one, it causes major problems on major interstates. So there's something called insight. I said, you see, we all still have work to do on these types of qualities. So now it was nice to be able to have two lanes on the way back, but it was like one of those things, you see it and it causes you maybe a little pain and grief on the way down because you realize I shouldn't have done that. And realize next time I probably will take Highway 25. But there's a lot of things that we learn, not just with interstates, obviously, but with so many other things. For those that get the opportunity or have the opportunity to connect with the internet, and you're able to go and see the recent In Accord, Mr. Franks goes through his trip over to Arkansas. And he reviews as far as the 50th anniversary, I believe it was the Fort Smith congregation. And he goes back to when some of these churches were started. And there's a lot of hindsight there, because there's someone from the Fort Smith congregation that started listening to the broadcast, or at least coming up with the information back in the 40s. And that man is still there today. I said, it's so interesting to have those that have been around for such a long time to have their experiences and what they went through at the time, because there were certain churches that weren't even started yet. In fact, some of us here were not even born at that time when they started going. But I noticed there was circuits that started up at that time. One was Fort Smith, and he had them numbered. I forget what number Fort Smith was, but that was the time where the Memphis church was started up, and I said, oh, I remember news about the Memphis church, not that because my son is living over in that area right now where Elvis ended up kind of situating himself, but Memphis was a church at that time that I was talked to by the members of the Montgomery, Alabama church, and they said during their time, and I can't remember if it was the 60s or if it was in the 70s, that members of the Montgomery, Alabama church, that's the only church that they had to go to. So every Sabbath, they would get ready and they would go to Memphis for Sabbath services. And there was no Interstate 65. They went Highway 31 all the way to Memphis. So when you went to Sabbath services back at those times, you were talking not just Sabbath, you were probably talking the entire weekend. Some here can reflect and remember some of those situations when it wasn't so easy. So sometimes what happens, though, is it gets a little bit easier as time goes on because you start to get more congregations, it starts to get easier access. I even remember moving here 9 years ago now, maybe a little bit more, right around 9 years, I know, and I wasn't really sure where the Knoxville church was. So we just decided it was a little bit frustrating because we didn't know, we couldn't sell our house, as many of you know. We just decided to all of a sudden take an apartment because we talked to the person here that says, oh, the high school is really good here. My child goes to the high school. We just said, we'll take it. We didn't even know really what it was. We didn't visit the complex. And when we got here, realized we were the closest ones to the Knoxville church when we finally moved in. It was probably, I think, a mile and a half away. So that's the closest that we ever, you know, lived to a church before. So it changed after that as we got another location. I still remember Mr. Sieber at the door when I came into the Knoxville church over at the old Masonic Lodge where we met, where there were no windows in the place. And now it comes down to we have this here. So we've got a little bit farther to drive. But one thing is you won't hear any murmuring or complaining from me. When you recognize in hindsight where you've come from and how long that we have to travel some places, you're not going to get many complaints from people anymore. They're still going to be there sometimes as we see some of the frustrations of which Moses had to endure. That's when we went back to Numbers. There's some other insights I'm going to give as we go there. But when you look at hindsight, one of the definitions of hindsight is the perception of the nature and of an event after it's happened. The perception of the nature of an event after it's taken place. So most of us here went through the real chaos and disruption that originally took place within our larger organization that was known as the Worldwide Church of God. We're able to look back at it maybe a lot differently from what we saw at the time because there were a lot of things that were taking place really depending on maybe the church that you were attending at the time. Maybe you had a minister that was standing up from the truth and that was resisting the changes. We are in an area where that was not happening, so we ended up leaving a little bit earlier. But I remember some of the things that were being said. I don't indict anybody for that because there was just a perception of what you were going through at the time that we never foresaw happening, never thought that that would happen. I didn't think when I was baptized that the church as I knew it was going to blow up in front of my face. In fact, I never thought that Mr. Armstrong would die. I really had to eat unclean food on that one called crow. I still remember that. Really, it was a perception that some of us had that it seemed that we were in the end time and that things were progressing at the time for the return of Jesus Christ. It didn't work out that way. Learn my lesson. Remember the song, "It's All Right Now, I've Learned My Lesson Well." That's the way it goes. We learn a lot through the things that we go through. That's called hindsight. It's a gift that God's given to us that hopefully in many cases we don't make the same mistake again. So I tend to be very cautious with certain prophecies and other things. I'm being careful because the Scripture does say no prophecy of the Scripture is a private interpretation. It's not that you can't talk about it. It's not that we can't have enjoyment speculating about what things may be like at the time. In fact, because of what was said, I wonder if Christ came down, if he would actually sit down and have a cup of coffee, or if he would have a soda. He would look at me and goes, "Oh, that stuff's not good for you." I have no idea. That's speculation, you see. I don't know. I know he'd enjoy a good glass of wine. That's for sure. But there's a lot of things that we talk about in hindsight that we didn't know would take place, would happen, and we've learned so much about them. We can go back even further. And during this time of which we're coming up now, we've got the ability, and we will be going through what happened all the way back in Old Testament times. It's something that we do on a yearly basis, and so many things that we can glean from. And then you bring it up to today's day and age, and you can think about the things that you went through when you were first baptized and what it was like. I never knew about this foot washing stuff and what it was like. That was all brand new to me. Some here, again, were born into the church. It became something natural on what you went through. So there's a lot of things that we can learn from this. Once again, this wonderful instrument with which are contained in part of the law called the testimonies, the ability for us to see and learn some very valuable lessons on what God has to say in the way that he worked and continues to work with his people. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we'll go into verse 1 here. I know I went here, I kind of ended here last time. I'd like to start up here again because of what it says. Paul brings this up twice within scriptures that he writes, that he wants us to be mindful of this, and he puts it in this way. Moreover, brethren, I don't want you to be ignorant. A remembrance of this. And for those of you that have probably, I guess I won't go for a raise of hands here, but you know, it was always fun watching that Ten Commandments video that some of you may have. We typically do that, you know, especially when the kids couldn't go to Passover with us. They would actually want to. They'd pop in the VHS that we had at the time. We bought a DVD so they could watch Yul Brynner and Charlton Heston. And I pointed out today, just in thinking and foresight about this, what it would be like in the future, because God does have a sense of humor. I look forward to the time, maybe there'll be a really nice movie theater, and you'll have Moses in one seat and Charlton Heston in the next seat, and they're going to watch the Ten Commandments. You know, I'm thinking if I was there just to watch that, I wouldn't be watching the movie. I would be watching Moses' face. As Moses is watching the movie and the Ten Commandments unfold, he kind of looks up, and then he looks over at Charlton Heston and just kind of shakes his head and goes, "You've got to be kidding me." And Charlton Heston will go, "That's all we knew. That's all we knew." You know, what would that be like? Things are going to be unveiled in the future. Some of these things are going to be enjoyable because that's all we could do is speculate. The Bible just gives us certain pieces. But, you know, it is enjoyable being able to go back and kind of look at how it might have unfolded, and then we get more pieces of information as time goes on. Because I remember as I watched that, after the people made the golden calf in there, you know, you could almost see it wasn't that well done. They would probably do a bit better job nowadays with the cinematography that they have, especially if it was a George Lucas or Steven Spielberg type setup, that the videography would be so much better. But there they are, they're gathered in this one valley, and God's dividing them up, and then the earthquake takes place. And they did, again, they did the best that they could do. But you're seeing how many people were involved there. And when you saw the masses of people that were truly involved, when you're talking millions of people that were involved with this, that was just a very small portion of what really encompassed the entire camp of Israel. And then some of the lessons that obviously we learned from that, because some people think it was a snap, hop, skip, and a jump to come out of Egypt that quickly. So that's where the variation goes on the Passover being the 15th. There's no chance in any way that they would have had time to gather everything, no matter what time frame you could have put it, for that many people to come out in ranks with their hand held high coming out of Egypt. In the places that we are in, to come together at Ramses to be able to do that, it would have taken an entire day, and frankly, even the entire day would have been miraculous for that many people to come together to do that. And here we are today looking at it because we can just snap our fingers, throw something in the microwave, and have it done. And that's not the way it was done back then. There were, and certainly even before that, there were certain preparations that they did for them to be able to come out during the time that they didn't. In fact, somebody else pointed a picture I thought was very well done in that they were ready to go, and some people will take that scripture literally where it says, "Now eat it with staff in hand." So really, well, what do I do then? I think, well, how do I cut my meat then? I mean, I got lamb here. What do I do to cut it? Can I put my staff? No, it says you got to have your staff in hand. Come on. What it means is do it in haste, be ready to go. Were they napping that night? I'm sure that some of them would have been taking maybe a short rest or whatever, but there was an excitement there. You know, some here, you know, remember the times that you could pull an all-nighter at college, and I realized the time I was moving out of my apartment, and I was there till 5:30. I told my wife, I'm done with this. I can't do this stuff anymore. I cannot pull an all-nighter because you're going to really pay for it. You know, talk about an all-nighter. That was probably the most exciting all-nighter that you can have, but they were still physical human beings. So there was probably a little bit of rest that maybe they got before they were allowed to come out of their homes in the morning. But see, where you're putting the entire package together in hindsight and putting all these pieces together, we're better able to do it now because we can look at the factors, examine what the Bible says, relate a little bit to it, and then kind of put that picture together in a little bit better of a way. So he says in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 1, I don't want you to be ignorant of how all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And you can find that same statement in 1 Thessalonians 4, where Paul did not want them to be ignorant of the resurrection. I don't want you to be ignorant. This is very important to remember this, because these were testimonies of hindsight that apply to this day, and I'll tell you how in just a minute. So now we got the ability in retrospect, which is a review or a survey or a contemplation of things in the past. Verse 2 says, they were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. Now, obviously, this is figurative. This is not the type of baptism that we have now, but it was a figurative type of baptism. They were coming out of Egypt, and we've used pictures and messages of that to show they were coming out of sin. Figuratively baptized, and they were supposed to come out on the other side and have a new view and a new vision now of going forward with their lives, and you realize that really didn't happen. It said in verse 3, they all ate the same spiritual meat, and they all drank from the same spiritual drink and drank of that spiritual rock that followed them. That rock was Christ. So now we see another picture and view of Jesus Christ being that one that led them by a pillar of fire out of Egypt. It was specifically that being. Some people think today that it was God the Father that was the God of that Old Testament. We understand by the entirety of the Bible, it says right here, that rock was Christ. It was Jesus Christ. That same one that was also known as Melchizedek. Another interesting question of which we cannot answer everything about Melchizedek. But we do know that this was a being that always had existed. That's what it said in Hebrews. And some have explanations of that as well, about why it wasn't Jesus Christ. Now, what we don't know is why he was there. What was he doing there? Can't answer that because it doesn't give all that information. But it was one to whom Abraham gave those tithes and offerings to. We'll find out the rest of the story. When we see Jesus Christ, you're going to find out exactly the entirety of the story of Melchizedek. You'll find out who shot Kennedy. You'll find all those other pieces of information that you've always wanted to know, and more biblical answers sometimes than the things that just are a little bit vague. But God doesn't want us to get distracted on those things because we've got more important things to take a look at here. So that rock was Christ, and it says, but with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Stop at verse 5 for a minute. This would all be Old Testament if we didn't stop to bring it up in our day and age now. And because of the things that have happened, we're able to do this. Because I remember coming into the church, and I've used some of these examples before. I came out of the world, per se. Again, it's different, I know, and we're trying to address it in that way as well. My wife grew up in that. She was born into the church. I did not. That was 14 years. It's easier maybe for me to understand coming out of Egypt a little bit more. Not that she can't, but there is a differentiation that, and we're talking about this, how to connect better with people that have been born into the church rather than coming out. There's differences there on being able to connect with that. But here we can say God was not well pleased. You come out of the world. I come out of a major sport that I played all my life, playing hockey. You come into the church, you watch some of the basketball games, and I'm analyzing and saying, I had a lot better hockey games than I've watched church basketball games. I've watched that. And you probably have too. We would come to some even winter family weekends where I was still shaking my head going, you've got to be kidding me. Does this really please God? Oh, we're getting together, we're playing basketball. Why, people curse, they shove, they elbow each other. Not that some physical things don't happen, but I'm talking about some major attitude problems that were here. And by the way, not just with the brethren, with some people that should have known a lot better. So did that happen in our lifetime? Not just with basketball, by the way, but across the board with so many things. People just coming and taking a seat at Sabbath services, that was challenged. That was tested. And people would say, and you remember that because maybe you asked the question. Well, God certainly is going to take care of this. We're certainly not going to lose the beautiful Pasadena campus that we have and all these things that we've put our effort and the money to. Hello, open up the door, it happened. And now we're able to look back at retrospect and hindsight and say, well, my vision was not so clear then either. I knew that God would take care of it, but this is how I thought that He would do it. It didn't happen that way. Then you're able better to relate to what happened all the way back in the Old Testament when God overthrew the Israelites. You remember when the Philistines took the Ark of the Covenant? That was huge in that time on the plains of Shiloh. Then all of a sudden the temple, not just overthrown once, overthrown twice, overthrown three times. The beautiful temple. How could God allow anything to happen to His temple? It had become so polluted and so perverted that Christ had to Himself overthrow the money changers in the temple. And somehow, it's difficult to put it up to nowadays. But it happened, didn't it? So that scripture right there relates to today. With many of them, God was not well pleased. They were overthrown in the wilderness. And we had 100,000 plus people that were coming to church. Can you even get close to that now? Someone asked me today, was there ever a manual or something that showed all of the people in the church? I said, no, but there's a ministerial booklet that's out. I just found it the other day. I'm kind of almost afraid to go through it. Because a long time ago in the 80s, a minister got up in one of our forums at college, and he showed me one of the previous manuals that they had. And I cannot remember, and I don't want the fish to keep getting larger, but there was a sizable amount of the ministry in the 80s that were no longer with the church. Bring it up to today. I mean, maybe some of you've got that. You remember some of these ministers. Gone, 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 gone. Now, some have died. Some have died in faith. And some have died, they left. Many have left. So can we bring that picture? Can we see that that's happened now? I have people say to me, I'm not going to have my son go through what I was taken through. And this is a guy I walked with, went to college with, kept the Sabbath day with. I'm not going to allow my son to be taken away things I was denied of when I was growing up. What's that? Couldn't play basketball on the Sabbath day. My kids are going to be able to play basketball on the Sabbath day. Other miracles that took place. One of the deacons that told me of the miraculous stories that he went through and how God called him out of this world into the church and spoke of that. I remember coming back from a spokesman's club and he was telling me this. A deacon was. The next thing I knew, he's keeping Christmas. He's gone. Gone! Can you bring that up to today? You sure can. They were overthrown in the wilderness. Verse 6, these things were our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. So we go hold your hand here and let's go to Numbers chapter 11, verse 4. Numbers 11, verse 4. That's where Mr. White got really close here. He got to verse 10. And the thing was, I'll bring another different example. You can understand the frustration that Moses must have had. the more that you look at this, you kind of go, I don't think I'd want to take Moses' place. How frustrating it must have been, because he was just constantly around murmurers and complainers. Verse 4, and the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again, and who said, who will give us flesh to eat? You know, maybe some of you had parents that would do that. And I remember, I can't remember a specific incident offhand right now, but I may have been crying, weeping or something. My dad would go, you better stop your crying now, or I'll give you something to cry about. You probably have all heard that. I don't know how the phrases carry on to different families, but you find out that, you know, we end up using them, and then your children end up using them. I'll give you something to cry about. But here they come out after great miracles, and, you know, were they hungry for meat? Was it reasonable? It could be reasonable, except as you go on, you find out that the attitude was wrong. That was the problem. God does not get mad over something that's legitimate. Verse 5, it says, we remember the fish which we ate in Egypt freely, the cucumbers. Now, verse 5, I had a hard time a little bit more relating to. Because if I looked back, I could have said, boy, I remember the roasted lobster tail with the drawn butter, the pork chops. They didn't even say that. This was all, I'm kind of looking, I'm going, well, this is all clean stuff that they remember that they had. They had the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic, and no doubt here they are going through the wilderness. And you know, that's all God gives to them. Look how it's put. Our soul is dried away. There is nothing all besides this manna before our eyes. Just the manna. That's all. That's, you know, God gives us this manna. You know, what if you went out your door tomorrow morning, you look on the grass, and there's this stuff that tastes great? You know, I could see the potential of that happening to us, because some have to go on special diets. And they say, I'm really glad that one of my diets now is I don't have to take away protein, because I still would love a nice steak. Isn't that great sometimes? And some have to be denied certain things, and your mouth waters for a nice, juicy steak sometimes, isn't it? It makes us decide sometimes on feast sites that we might go to. Because you're figuring, well, if I go there, I know I'm not going to get that. I went to a feast site one time, a luxurious so-called feast site. The motel was like a Motel 6. But the island was exotic, that's for sure. And it was great if you like coconuts. And mangoes, what are we having today? Coconuts and mangoes. What about tomorrow? Coconuts and mangoes with salt and pepper. That's sometimes what you'll get. So if you live in the United States and you go to a United States feast site, I was thinking about specific examples such as whoever went to Sheboygan. It's almost like I was a-lusting after that a little bit. I was going, wow, that'd be a nice feast site to go to, because you're right on Lake Michigan. It's a resort area. Everybody gets to stay there. All the elements of a feast that you would like. Probably really good food, that I found out the food was really good. And so you get that whole thing that's right there in the United States. How many here have volunteered this year to go to Zimbabwe or Malawi? You know, if you get something like that there, you're going to be pretty lucky. You may get something like malaria or something else. But see, that's, you look at some of these things that test sometimes our attitudes and the way that we look at things. We bring it up to nowadays, and you realize we can be just as complaining and murmuring as anybody else can. Now, if you've heard it, as I've had, if you're at the feast, somebody has probably complained to you, or maybe you've complained to someone else. They never have enough seating. There's never enough seating. Whenever I come, all the seats are reserved all the time. Oh, by the way, we're planning this. They have a meeting every year to figure out how they can clog the seats for all of you, just to really tick you off, because they realize, you know, God's not doing any testing, so we need to do it for you. Now, obviously, you recognize there's ways, we come together, you try to figure this out. There's always problems when you get a lot of people that come to a feast site. But we don't have meetings on how to tick off the brethren. Let's get one over here that the people have to climb up a hill, then it rains and people are slipping and sliding all over the place. It's happened right here in Pigeon Forge. I've heard the stories. Now, I can't say that I've heard it in a complaining way, okay, to be fair. Because there are legitimate, sometimes, concerns. Those are fine. And you try to fix it. I noticed this year, I don't know if it was the year before, but they had shuttles that would go up there and bring people down. And yes, it's difficult when it's raining. And maybe the bathrooms weren't so easily accessible and things of that. I've heard things of that nature. But they don't get together and go, hey, look, did you notice that the women's bathroom is really hard to get accessible? We really need to have that. We need to have that convention center this because the women need some testing. So we're going to nail down that convention center. Sometimes we don't even think about it that way. Do you know how difficult it is to secure a convention center or to or secure a fee site somewhere? It's that difficult. But sometimes you can find yourself or others all of a sudden back to the old Israelites. Who was the wise guy who did something like this? Or someone that comes up to me and goes, the sound is way too loud. Okay, where are you sitting? Here's the speaker. That's where they're sitting. And I'm kind of going, really? Do I have to do they do math? Can you add two and two? The further you sit away from the speaker, the less volume that you're going to have. Just like you turn that knob. When you turn that knob that way, the volume goes up. When you turn it down, it goes down. So if you don't turn it down, if you don't want to get right, just move back. Let somebody that's harder of hearing sit in those seats. Really? But that's what happens. You can basically count on something like that happening. We have to make sure that we don't get caught in that trap and Satan can start to bring us down to the fact that you really think that somebody's out to get you. I've noticed that when I've drive sometimes. Why did I hit 5 red lights in a row? Are there any green lights that I can just like go through? You feel like you're getting set up or something. And then you take a deep breath and you go, maybe I'm just being challenged or tested right now. So things, I'm just not going to let it bother me. Oh, another red light. Let's sing a song. Let's just sing. You know, things that you try to change that because you realize what's happening. God gives us the testimony so we can think about these things. Now, God gave them, it says he gave them manna. It was like coriander seed, it said. Now, this is another thing we can look at in the future. There are some out, even out here, that are pretty good with herbs. And that really impresses me because I know that they were made and I don't have the time to really look into those all the time. There are little bits that you can grasp onto here and there as far as what all these herbs are for. You got chock full of herbs and I don't know how to use them. I don't mind cooking, but do I throw coriander? What's the nutmeg for? Turmeric. I heard that's good for you, but do I put it on fish? Do I put it on... What do you do? And how do you use all those things? And God made herbs and other things for a good purpose. It says here, speaking of the color of it as bdellium, and then you find out if you do a research on coriander, it says it's not just a spice used in cooking, but it has medicinal values and it promotes natural feeling. And I'm kind of going, bingo. God has them out in the wilderness. They don't have a normal diet, so he gives them something that's going to be good for their bodies because they're not going to be eating what they normally ate. And here they are in a big camp, and he doesn't want them to get dysentery and everything else that happens when you put a lot of people into a camp. So he gives them manna, and it's good for healing. And you go, wow, do you imagine how that tasted? And it speaks about it. So the people, verse 8, went about, gathered it, they ground it in mills, they beat it into mortar and baked it in pans and made cakes of it. And the taste of it was as the taste of fresh oil. And when if you tasted a really good fresh oil, it's got a sweetness to it that is so good. And so that's what God gave to them to be able to eat. And they obviously, just as the people of God today, you'll see the experimentation that we have in our pot blessing meals afterwards. You know, if we had like a Mexican type outing, you could see it's more clear to see it even then because it's really the same stuff, isn't it? But you got tacos, you got burritos. Well, what is it? It's beans and rice, same stuff. Same things, we just make it in different ways. And it's fun and it's enjoyable. But this is the way that they did it. They made it in different ways. They found, oh, we can make this as a cake. We can do it in a mortar. We can do it this way. They found different ways to do it. They used their creativity. You know, when you think about its taste from God, was it not the best that one would ever taste when it came to cuisine? Verse 9, it says, when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell upon it. Then Moses, as here we are now, Moses heard the people weep through the families and every man in the door of his tent, and it says the anger of God was kindled greatly, and Moses was also displeased. So it was obviously a different cry than normally one would get if one was really sad. It was a cry of murmuring because they were looking back. And the bad thing, the only negative part about looking back, you would find a companion scripture, would be Luke 9:62. And you probably all know it. No man putting his hand to the plow and looking back is what? Is fit for the kingdom. To look back at what you came out of, and a lot of people did that. They regretted it because they became convinced of the lie that they were being sold by someone that was at a lectern saying, God doesn't expect you to deny yourself on the Sabbath. You ought to be able to go to a baseball game. You ought to be able to have your kids play. And denial, we've been denied all these other foods all of our life. You ought to be able to eat catfish and whatever you want that God made to be clean, because as soon as you bless it, everything's made clean. They've been watching too much I Dream of Jeannie. Really, they were sold a bill of goods and a lie. And you wonder, the one thing that Cecil B. DeMille did was Edward G. Robinson. He was really good at being the inciter, if you remember. We could have had it so much better back then. He almost would have hit him then on the TV because he does such a good job at what he did in convincing the people to go against Moses. You had murmurers and complainers that would spread, that would incite everybody else. Yeah, Moses is just in it for himself. Who does he think he is? Did that happen? With Aaron and his own sister, it happened. They were sold a bill of goods too. That's all hindsight and testimony that we have. Then I like to bring it up into a spot to go, am I doing the same thing? Am I? And it's not that you can't legitimately discuss an issue, but it's how we go about doing it. And we ask ourselves, you know, Mr. Franks even today asked, because he says the capacity of our offices are full. And I went out there. For the past couple of years, we've had our camp meetings in a small little office, and we cram ourselves and our wives, which weren't meant to get everybody like that into, but we get in there, cram ourselves in there, we have a great time and get a lot done. There's no murmuring and complaining. We're just grateful to be there. But it's getting smaller and smaller as more people get in there to help and to serve. Someone just asked recently, Gary Johnson, he goes, you know, it's been difficult getting these sorted out and getting some of the information. I go, we're getting our database operations going. This whole computerization's been a headache, and it's very difficult to do. So you've had to go through the process, because he remembered, you know, previously we had envelopes with the identifying number and all that. We're starting to work with that and getting that database going, so it'll be easier to generate, you know, the magazines and everything else and all the other requests that are coming out. We're just getting our campsite started. It's kind of a kickstart for our camps and our registration to try to make it easier, but it's a bear getting this thing off the ground and getting it going. There's a lot of knowledge that's needed. And then as far as getting envelopes out and getting envelopes processed, we only had one person that was doing the entirety of all the offerings that were coming in and processing them. One person that was doing it. So it was very difficult. So it takes some time to get that going. And if you can see that and go out there, you go, wow, so now we're needing space. We've run out of space. There's no more. What does God want us to do? And that's the question. So they're asking now, and they're asking prayers, please ask God to show us, should we lease? Should we purchase? Should we build our own? And that's a legit question going out. What should we do? I can't tell them. They're asking for professional service to give them information and seeking wisdom to the best of their ability. I love when we're doing that, because according to the Word of God, That's what we're supposed to be doing, seeking wise counsel on what we should do and then praying about it. You can't find anything better than that. That's the way it's supposed to work. So Moses and God were both angered because of this attitude. So we could ask ourselves, how can we lust after things today? I mean, is this not a now society? Are we not so debt-ridden that even people in the church find themselves in that ways because someone convinced them that credit cards are a good idea and they don't know how to handle them? So they rack up debt going, I didn't realize this was going to happen and that was going to happen. All of a sudden you find yourself 10, 12, 50, and even the people of God, that happens too. Verse 7, it says, neither be idolaters. And you go, how do you bring that up? Because it was, you know, you thought idolatry, but we've had messages about idolatry. We can be idolaters today. It doesn't mean that you've got to worship a totem pole. It says, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Think about that nowadays. Wow, how society has changed so much. At least years ago when I was involved with the sport of hockey, I believe, if I remember right, that the Stanley Cup championships would be somewhere in January, if I'm thinking correctly. Those are extended, I believe, now into April, if not May. What you get is you get all these sports that are coming on the scene now. I just remember NASCAR ending. It usually ends, I'm not an avid follower, but you kind of watch certain races now and then. The last one that they race is in Homestead, Florida. I forget when that ends, but it's already back going again. So you got NASCAR going. What else do you have in the month of March? It's madness, and that's what they call it. March Madness, perfect name for it. But that's got people following their teams, and it's serious stuff. And I've mentioned that to you here, right here in Knoxville. It actually is better for us here living in Knoxville if the Tennessee people win their games. I actually want them to win because they're happier people here during the week. It's serious business here if that's the only thing going in Tennessee. People are really much happier if their team wins. And it gets that serious. People will kill over sports games. And it is constant now. If it's not golf or basketball and the basketball NBA finals, those are extended now because there are more teams, more games that are being played. So if you're not watching March Madness, you can watch the pros. You can watch at the very end of May what's going on at the end of May in Kentucky, Kentucky Derby. Indianapolis 500. If you wrote the list down, you'd almost be surprised at how many distractions are and really what is more important to people nowadays. Does it literally take a physical image? There are a lot of distractions. Verse 8, it says, neither let us commit fornication, from the Greek word porneo. What's one of the biggest problems that we've got in the world today because of internet? One of the biggest problems that many of the churches of this world have to deal with today is pornography addiction. And what a perfect way for Satan to distort what God made to be so wonderful and beautiful. And it's a huge, besides debt, it's a huge factor in the divisiveness within a marriage covenant. And it has to do with adultery. It says, neither let us commit fornication. God took that so seriously, it said 23,000 fell in one day. Verse 9, it says, neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of the serpents. Keep your finger there. Let's go to Numbers 21, verse 4. Numbers 21, verse 4. Here it says, and they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to compass the land of Edom, and the souls of the people were very discouraged because of the way. Legitimate. No doubt a lot of them wondered why they were wandering the way that they were. Have you not asked the same question sometimes? That's legit. There's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes we get discouraged because of the way. All of us here have been involved in these different splits and different forms. Yeah, you get tired of them. But the dangerous part, as Mr. White brought out, here's the dangerous part, is if you become encompassed by this attitude, that can get you cynical. And you think nothing's there. And there are very cynical people out there. Some have said, if another split happens, I'm done. And I just said, you just set yourself up to fail. You just set yourself up. So you're saying, you think we've learned our lesson out? I'm not saying that we haven't. But haven't we learned from the lessons that, look, when you were baptized, no one ever said you were baptized in any physical corporation. That exists, that same thing exists to this day. And I tell people, I said, I'm baptizing you. If something ever happens to this church, that's irrelevant. You find out where God's fellowship is on the Sabbath day and you continue to keep His commandments. That's what we've learned. Because it becomes discouraging from time to time. It can get that way. But these testimonies help us because we see it's no different. God was still with them. That was the whole point. God's always been with them. He just never said, I never said that everything would go perfect and everything would be this wonderful. It's going to be like the Garden of Eden. In fact, we thought about that, coming to think about the millennium, where it is going to be wonderful. But wow, I've gotten some messages that think it's going to be all, they proverbially, hell's going to break loose in the millennium. But we see that there's going to be a need to teach people because of an attitude that comes over that's going to have to be worked with. We're going to have our work cut out for us, but we're going to be trained and we're going to be helping people, and that's exciting. Verse 5, it says of Numbers 21, and the people spoke against God and against Moses. Wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there's no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loathes this light bread. Can you bring that up to today? I can. I've heard it. It's because of all these ministers that we've had these splits. That's what it is. It's all their fault. Is that really the truth? That is such faulty and wrong thinking and leads people down the wrong path. There's fault enough for everybody, including everybody that's here. Everyone has made mistakes and fallen short of God's glory. And God was not happy with it. Many of the people Israel died, it says in verse 6. Going back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 10, it says, neither murmur you, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. Numbers 14, verse 26. It was very, very sad when something so wonderful took place. You know, when I look back at times that many of you had come to the knowledge of the truth long before me, and have such wonderful stories. You know, Gary Johnson shares with me the story that I don't want to forget when he's sitting in his cell, and one of the inmates got fed up and just threw these booklets out. Gary grabs them. He's baptized. My neighbor, who was living next to us, brought us over the Plain Truth magazine somewhere in the 60s. They never came into the work. But my mom looked at that. We started watching or listening to the radio broadcast, and I still remember the radio broadcast with fondness. It was something that was different. And again, I know it's different for the second, third, and fourth generations, but for us, It was much different. You heard something different that was being preached. And that's why I brought it up to nowadays, and you're thinking about this famine of the word that's being spoken of. How can you have a famine of the word when so much information is going out now? You've got all the various churches basically sending out a message of the kingdom of God. That's something that's identified just about the same, isn't it? But sometimes there's scattered messages within there, isn't there? So does Satan have a hold of this going, aha, we're shooting out so much that I'm going to shoot out disinformation with it. So you'll get with one and they've got the 15th Passover. Or they got, well, the calendar is different over here. That becomes discouraging because you get about a flavor of every different church that's out there. Well, none are perfect. I realize that, so I'm not condemning or criticizing anybody. I'm just saying that's what we have. So how can you get to be a famine of the word when some are producing the same message? Sometimes you're getting a lot of information, and then you see the same thing happening in the world, don't you? Can you believe anything that you hear nowadays on the news? Well, this person said this, then another candidate will go, well, he said that, but he said that. And you go, well, I didn't say that. Well, I didn't say it that way. Here's what I said. Well, that was before I believed it this way. Then you're kind of going, who do you believe anymore? See, you see the same pattern sometimes in both in the church and in the world. Those are the parts that need the discernment. But the part for us to continue going forward is to recognize nothing's really new under the sun, is it? Isn't Solomon the one that said that? Sometimes the things that can go get so frustrating because it's all vanity. It's all vanity. I was watching a program this past week where they're fixing up these old cars. One that was kind of a neat one. I can't remember what year of a Plymouth that it was. Somewhere back in the 50s when they had really big engines in them. And this one was an old one. If some remember how the restaurant Hardee's started. I think it was out in California. It originally began as a Carl's. I think it was almost a full-fledged restaurant. Then a Carl's Jr. was started. And out of Carl's Jr., you get Hardee's. What was neat about this is the original owner started it because of this car. He was able to get, because it was a very nice Plymouth, he was able to get a loan from the bank, and he used that as collateral. Today, to this day, you've got huge million-dollar-plus industry. It started from a bank loan from that car. So they decide, well, we're gonna go around the United States now, promote the restaurants, and we'll use this car with that message of how it got going. And the guy said, he go again and restore it, and he starts pulling things off, and it's all rusted. I mean, they really had to do some major work on restoration of this car. And I thought, you know, what's going to happen in another 40 years? That car may return to its former luster of rust. And the Bible speaks about that, doesn't it? And then you and I go through the same thing. It's so interesting. Going through things that you used to have, and it just goes, well, this is old, this is dilapidated. Then sometimes you realize it's just all vanity. All the things that you had, thinking about planting trees on the side of our house just to block some of the noise on 441, I actually need to buy the ones that are already about 30 feet high, but they're really expensive. Because if I plant one that's about 2 or 3 feet right now, I might be transferred before it accomplishes the purpose when it gets to that point. And I've recognized that. I realize that. And I could complain about that. And my kids could complain about that. Well, that's all we've had to do is transfer all the time. You know, we go from here to here. We've gone from Kentucky to Louisiana to Georgia to Alabama. We're always transferring all the time. My kids have not complained, not that I've heard, because there are always blessings that come along with that. You meet new friends. You see new places. And yeah, I know what it's like to live in a place for 20 years. That was pretty neat because you know who your dentist is. You know the hardware guy. You know where to go. Your neighbors, you all know, hey, can I borrow a shovel? You know, you just know everybody. That's really nice to do. But it's all vanity. It doesn't last. And then you get to, why should I even read the book of Ecclesiastes? That sounds like a really bummer of a book. No, it's actually very pointed and very uplifting when you hear the message that's given. He says there's a point of that book. If somebody were to ask you that, do you all know the point of the book of Ecclesiastes? Some would say, it's all vanity. That's not the point. That's the realization of what this life is. It goes by really quick, and that could be depressing, except for what we know. And I tell people that have the aching bodies, that they have a hard time hearing, that can't see very well, hang in there, because it's just for a short time. And you're going to be able to hear as great as crystal clear and see as clear, and nothing's going to hurt anymore. When you get it, you know, if you lie down for a while, if spirit beings, I hope we can lie down in a hammock or something. Do you need to sleep? Probably not, but you don't need to eat either. No, so when you go through all those things, there's going to be no more pain and no more hurt, and we're going to have a wonderful, wonderful purpose to live for the rest of eternity. And I try to think about those things for the 1,000 years that I'll wait for my dad to be resurrected, and how exciting that's going to be. These days are so temporary. God says, enjoy Him, squeeze all of the joy out of it, because even Solomon said, live happily with the wife of your youth. There are some good things that it says in there to do, and at the very end, he goes, this is the point. This is the entire point of all that I've said. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is what it's all about. But even then, we can't take that so literal that that just says commandments. That means we can do away with the holy days. No, it's talking about the entirety of God's law, and we can be happy. And this is what we're going to be teaching people in the future. But Numbers 14, it talks about, once again, the murmurings. In verse 27, how long will I bear with this evil congregation who murmur against me? I've heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, who they murmur against me. He hears the same murmurings today that he did back then. They're not covered up. You can't use lead to cover up murmurings. He hears everything. He knows the heart. And so he had them wander. And it says, you will wander, in verse 33, for 40 years. And the people that brought up the evil report. Now, it's very interesting here. This reminds me, in verse 38, the ones he was pleased with, Joshua and Caleb. I don't know if any of you have Joshua Caleb's. I've got one that's going to be coming out of a box pretty soon. I don't know which box. So all I know, we've been getting just little boxes from storage now. That it's been actually, I thought it would be not as fun as it is, but because we're bringing a few at a time, I told my wife, these are all gifts, by the way. They're now gift boxes. After 8 years of being in storage, we don't know what's in what box. So we're going to open a box and go, guess what? We get to find out what's in this one. And you open the box, you go, wow, I didn't think we had that. And you're kind of digging out there and going, look at this. We can use this one. Well, we don't use, let's give that one to the kids. And oh, look at this. And there was a brand new candle. And my wife goes, well, I gave that to your mom. I'm going, you gave it as yourself. You get it as a gift to you now. It's your gift. And there's a Joshua and a Caleb in there somewhere. So you look at all these things on what you can be happy about. Because there's plenty of reason to complain. You know, I've mentioned even in this area, I was sent to an area that they said were pristine, but I could be complaining about the Y2 plant and all the problems they've got up there. I'm waiting for Mr. Hicks to light up and Mr. Worden. You see, all the Alcoa down to the south, you got Eastman Chemical out to the east, and then you can't eat the fish out of the Cumberland Lake because of the mercury contamination. Pristine area. And I could be writing my letters of murmuring in, and then they could send me to New York City. Please, no. I'll take this. This is a beautiful area. It's a beautiful area. We've no doubt polluted the earth, and we can look at a time when God's going to renew this, and we're going to teach people the right way to do it. And I like being mindful of that. That in the future, we'll be walking with people. We're going to smell smells. You're going to see signs on a store that we just made this homemade bread. You're not going to need signs that say, no GMOs. No signs with that. I mean, don't we look for, the more you see this, we've got to dig through all these ingredients. It's not going to be there anymore. Now, maybe it'll be a process. We're going to have to teach people God's land laws and the land rests and all the wonderful things that are good. But all these things that are so negative around us, stop. That's it. And we've got our jobs cut out for us, and God's going to give us the energy, the wisdom, and we're being trained right now for all this. But we also have the hindsight to see and do a reflection. Why I'm saying this now is because we're going to have a lot of stories come up as we approach Passover season on what took place. And it's always good to have reminders of that. And we can look at that and go, yeah, I kind of knew that that would happen. It's a great refresher, and I like going through it. We're going to have the days of unleavened bread and do some of those same things that we've always done. But it's good for us to take a look in the mirror and go, is that what I've been, have I done that? Am I murmuring or complaining? Or am I a happy person? And it doesn't mean that you've got to sit on something that may not be going right. There's ways to go about addressing problems and situations that we have. That's also in the Bible, and that's biblical. But have we taken on that attitude? Because that's the attitude that we see in this world. And believe it or not, that analogy of the rotten apple spoiling the bunch, that does happen. You can find yourself being in a negative attitude because of the things that you watch and take in. I've noticed it. I've had to shut it off from time to time. I can listen to pieces and I'll go, that's it. That's it. Because I turn the radio on, and the first thing I hear is the name of a candidate. Turn it back off again. You can't go without hearing certain names or some kind of idea or something like the National Enquirer being attached to it. And it can get very frustrating. I need to go back to my Bible and look at the positive things that we have. These things are going to take place. And then the discernment that's needed, brethren. As I had mentioned, when it was said that somebody said, well, if we don't get this group of people that's going to come into power, our country's sunk because they're going to get another Supreme Court justice that's going to think the way that everybody else does. Did you think about that? And I thought, wait a second, we're already there. Nobody's going to come in and change the morality of these people. So, I mean, would you legitimately say that we're sunk? I mean, I'll take a look at the broad picture and go, we're in trouble. We are really in trouble. And unless God does a miracle, and I know He's God of miracles, and I know from history, from hindsight, looking back, that Israel sinned a lot, and God was so merciful and allowed them quite a long time before they were eventually dispersed, before He really brought down the fullness of His wrath. Because really, when people sin, normally they receive the result of what they do in breaking the law anyway. So what happens to us naturally happens to us, and we get the result of our sins anyway without God's wrath coming upon us. But the time comes where it's going to open up, and what He said is going to happen to this country will eventually happen. Is that in our time now? I don't know. All I know, having that knowledge, we need to sharpen ourselves. Where are we with this field of vision that we've got? Can we learn from these experiences in you from your life and me from my life? That's the whole point of all this. I hope we can take these examples, these testimonies of the Old Testament that sometimes we can read and go, well, how's that applied to now? Oh, in more ways than you ever think. Because there's nothing new under the sun. It happens in our day and age too. Verse 11 says, 1 Corinthians 10, all these things happened to them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he fall, because he knew that people would be saying, and you've heard this before, because I probably said it, you probably said it, your parents would tell you something, and we would say, but it's different now. Things are different. Times are different. And sometimes you wish I would have listened more to the wisdom of my parents who had been through it. I thought things were different. And then you have kids and recognize they say the same things. It's different. And you shake your head and go, there might be circumstances that are different, but it's the same attitudes, the same outlooks that fall upon all of us. Verse 13, and then he interjects this. There's no trial, temptation that's come upon you, but such is common to man. God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tested above that which you are able, but will with the test also may a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. And we certainly have plenty of testimonies there. I certainly have my share. You've got your share. And we can take those shares and share them with each other to be encouraged by the fact that when we go through our low points and troubles in life, that God's there to take care of us and provide for us, that we don't have to become like the murmuring Israelites and just say, why is he forsaken us? Why has he neglected us? It's not happened. We've got too many of the testimonies that show us. Let's learn from this gift of hindsight that God has given us to see. He's given the scriptural examples for us to show it. Now it's for us to live by it.